Blog Talk Radio.
It's to you.
Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, a spiritual relationship expert helping men and women heal their bodies, their relationships, and their lives through love. Author of the book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and director of HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter how old you are at the moment. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Today I am speaking with Nancy Gaynor, co-owner of Gaynor Ranch and Resorts in Whitefish, Montana. With a bachelor's degree in business marketing and an MA in rural economic development and various real estate licenses, she has founded and owned many different businesses, and has even helped other business owners write their business plans, do forecasting and marketing, and open up new businesses. Nancy Gaynor has also been involved in world leadership, such as her involvement with the World Conference Against Racism and as a fellow for the Rural Development Leadership Network. At this point, she has a very unique and special focus, her beautiful Gaynor Ranch and resorts in Montana, featuring luxurious cabins and a return to nature which attracts guests from all over the world. And before introducing our guest today, I would like to read something in her own words. In the KM Ranch Valley, close to Whitefish, Montana, you will think you have died and gone to heaven. Here at our ranch, with its luxurious cabins, or at the cabins in the woods, you will find the scenery so beautiful that you'll want to burn every eyeful into your soul. Our guests say that to be a guest here at Gaynor's is to be given the greatest gift that Montana has to offer, a chance to revive your spirit and reinvent your life through awe and adventure, comfort and beauty. So I am thrilled to hear more about this special retreat. I could certainly use one of my own in the mountains of the beautiful state of Montana. So I'd like to introduce you to Nancy Gaynor. Hello and welcome, Nancy.
Hey, Erica. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to have you here. So it's such a treat to be speaking with you because you obviously have led quite an adventurous life and you have an adventurous spirit and you've done a lot of different things.
Oh, I know. It's really been a great adventure.
Right. I mean, and it fits to be out west like that in the Wild West. So I would love to hear more about your background, your training, your education, how this all came about, and then you ended up with this wonderful ranch.
Well, it's kind of full circle because I grew up on a ranch on the reservation, and I, you know, that's where I spent most of my life, my early life is riding the ranges on the ranch. And so then I, you know, after school, I started many businesses, as you said, and then when I met Don on the internet.
But where did you go to school? Did you go to a local school?
Yeah, I went to Montana State.
Okay, so you were in Montana.
Yeah. And after that, I came, you know, I started a lot of businesses, like you said. And then after I met Don, he had a ranch again. So full circle, I'm back at it again.
So it's like full circle. But where have you gone? I mean, you were at the ranch, you went to college, but then how did all those other things happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I got out of college, I was, staying in Montana because of my then husband. He was still finishing school, and there wasn't a lot of opportunity for marketing. So I found a franchise to buy that I could. It was so crazy because I went to the bank to borrow some money, and they said, "Well, we don't do loans like this." And I did. I listed all my assets, and I had a net worth of $9,000. The one to borrow 12, and they keep saying they didn't do it. But my fourth time in, they gave me the money, so I bought this franchise. And then they were shocked because I started making a lot of money real fast.
But making money with the ranch?
No, that was with my first business.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and then I sold that, and I bought another franchise, a printing company that I ran for 12 years. And after that, I went back to work on the reservation, like you said, helping other people get into business and economic development. And that's where I got master's degree.
So you were helping individuals at that point?
Yeah.
Well, and then, but how did you get involved with the UN? You said you did something with them.
Well, then I found this online group out of New York City called Rural Development Leadership Network. And they help people, they help individuals in rural areas get an advanced degree. So I started working with them, and they're the ones that that take us to the UN every year. And we did the paper I wrote for my master's. We did a presentation on it at the World Conference in Durban, which was an amazing experience.
Where is Durban?
South Africa.
Ah, I was wondering where it was. Wow, so you went all the way there, and what were you talking about at that event?
I was talking on internalized oppression, which is a phenomena that happens to a lot of people of color. And it was amazing because it was it happens to a lot of people from different countries. And I thought it was just, you know, something that happened on our reservation, but a lot of people that have been oppressed have this phenomena that happens, and I'm convinced that if we can solve that problem, that it's a great, it would solve a lot of the world's problems.
So, what exactly are you talking about? Internalized.
Well,
oppression.
It happens when a group is misinformed and mistreated for a long time, then eventually the people that have been mistreated take on the role of the oppressor. And there's a phenomenon that occurs, and it's kind of like, and Indians hate this story, but this is what happens. It's like the crab in the bucket theory, you know, like the two pots of lobster that are on the beach, you know. One has a lid and the other one doesn't. And they said, well, why does that one have a lid and the other one doesn't? And they said, well, the one with the lid is the white crab. And the other one is the Indians, because every time they try to get out, the others pull them back down. And that's kind of what happens, you know, when people have been oppressed for a long time. They attack each other, and, you know, and then they just kind of stay status quo.
Whoa, so I thought you were going to say that the internal oppression stops the person from succeeding. But you're saying something very different. You're kind of saying that they become an aggressor toward each other.
But then the oppressor is afraid to succeed. You know, not all of them are oppressors. A certain amount of them take on that role.
But if they take on that role, they're still afraid of succeeding.
Yeah, and that's kind of what happens.
Wow.
So, you know, we can identify it now, but to actually solve it, I'm not sure of that. That's some research I want to get into yet.
And I also think that a lot of women suffer from that. internal oppression that we can't succeed. And as you're talking, I'm realizing that baby boomers, and as people are aging, they may feel that way, oppressed,
it's
that they're not supposed to do anything anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Very interesting. It's a bigger phenomenon than even you may think.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think if we could know how to deal with it, then we could solve a lot of the problems of the world. You know, when we start identifying it on our reservation, and then it didn't make the things that were happening, you could say, oh, that's just internalized oppression, you know, but you didn't take it so personal.
Right. Well, that's a very important concept in Buddhism. They talk about that, to not take anything personally.
Yeah.
And when you can depersonalize it, then you can deal with it.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you worked with rural development leadership also? How do you work with that? What do you do with that?
Actually, we have a lot of every 2 years they have a institute at the University of California, Davis. And a lot of times I'll do presentations there to the new fellows. And then we have assembly every other year for all the graduates. And we get together and everybody tells their story and we work together to better America. See, you know, it seems like if you can hear something that works in one area, that it might work in the next area. And it's a great program. It really is. She's changing America one person at a time. The president of it it lives in New York City.
So I was just going to ask, do they all live in rural areas?
Yes, all the fellows
involved.
Uh-huh. Yeah, one of our great, the one that's had the most fame lately is that Shirley Sherrod. She was a fellow, and then she was on the board for a while, and now she's just back to being a fellow. But she's one of our most famous graduates right now. But there's a lot of them that have worked in. Migrant worker issues, or the black farmers, or the Indian country. You know, it has to do with a lot of groups throughout America that in rural America.
A lot of marginalized groups that most people don't pay attention to.
Right.
And they really need the help. And what's interesting is that these people are doing the work that helps all of us, you know, later on.
Exactly.
Whatever it is, if they're doing the farming, we get the food later on.
Oh, for sure. And they're trying to save farms, you know, and that's a, you know, we need our farms. And they're trying to make sure that the farmers can keep their land and all that kind of stuff.
Wow, so it sounds like you have a huge mission in life that you've been performing.
You know, I got a lot to do yet. You know, I'm getting on towards 60, but, you know, I don't feel like it.
Hmm.
You know,
well,
there's still a lot of things I want to do.
Like what do you have in mind to do to continue?
Well, I want to go back and work for our Indian college that's on the reservation, because I think there's not a lot of role models out there that people have actually got out and ran businesses and that type of thing. And I think that I can... you know, I worked there for 8 years, and then when I met my husband, I came off and worked on our ranch for 10 years. So I've always felt like I needed to go back and do more there.
It sounds so valuable, and you understand what they need. You're bringing resources from your culture.
Yeah. I have a lot to learn. I always like to, I'm always a student.
Well, that's one of the things that they say about really highly successful people are continual students. Because there's so much to learn in whatever you get into. So how did this ranch come about, and what is going on there?
Well, I met my husband when I was working down for the reservation on the internet. I always say, where does the Indian meet a Jew, right? And so then after we dated for a while, he wanted us, me and my kids, to move out to his ranch. And I kept saying, you don't have room for us. And so we started building cabins. And then we got married. And we just kept building until we've got this nice little resort in Montana.
So did you start by living in these little cabins, or your family living in the cabin?
No, he had a house, but we had to add on to it so that he had room for us. But then we built these cabins to get more income. And we left it pretty, what am I going to say? You know, like the things that are exciting at the ranch is a rope swing that goes out into the river, the otter slide that you slide down, playing in the hay. You know, we left it so it's like stepping back in time, going back to your grandmother's. And kids absolutely love it.
A lot of people never had those kind of experiences. People growing up in a city or even in Florida where I am right now, people don't have that kind of experience.
Well, they say that a lot of the kids that come are nature deficit. And we assign them a horse when they come, and oh my, that is the biggest thrill. They cry when they leave. It's just so fun.
Well, but do they know how to ride, or you also teach them how to ride?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, we teach them. They
don't have to be experienced when they come there.
Oh, no. Probably 95% aren't.
Oh, okay.
So
you have riding and you teach them, and what else do they have there?
Well, the thing is, our area is there's so much to do. We have Glacier National Park. We have, in the wintertime, we have real close to us is the dog sled rides. We have the ski area, the cross country. You know, there's a lot to do in the winter. And summertime, you know, you whitewater rafting, fishing. There's so much to do, you know, that people, it's just a great place to come.
Wow, it's exciting. When I hear the dog sled rides, I mean, how many Easterners have ever been on something like that? That's exciting.
Oh, and they are, and it's so fun. I've only been a couple times, but it's real close to the ranch. And my daughter and I are driving the team this winter for the sleigh rides. Well, you know, we always hire these guys, and they're great. You know, they're great. And I might chicken out if it gets too cold. You never know. But we're going to get out there and sing the Christmas carols and all that kind of stuff, you know, and you've got the bells on the team. So it's going to be pretty fun as soon as we get snow.
So is your ranch all by itself? Are there other ranches nearby?
There are ranches nearby. And the neighbors let us go through their property. So we have a great big meadow that we go on for the sleigh rides.
That sounds really
and also
lovely.
Right next, I know, next to our ranch we have we lease 7,000 acres that we ride on, and there's 70 miles of trail, so you could do a new trail every day. I get lost up there still, you know, but it's so beautiful. It really is. This time of year we've got the tamaracks that are turning yellow, and, you know, we're still out there riding, so it's fun.
Wow, it sounds beautiful. Does it get really cold?
It will in December, you know, because we get snow on the ground. But, you know, I'm getting my long johns with the battery controlled, you know. Keep warm, because I'm a wuss when it comes to cold.
Oh, that's funny that you live in that environment.
Yeah.
See, that's so hardy. But it sounds like such an adventure for people who, so many of us are caught up in the stress of everyday life and everything going through and our families. And it sounds like a wonderful escape and a completely different world.
And you know what? People need that time when they can just totally relax. And I can see it when people come now, you know, because I've said that for so long. They come and their faces are all uptight from all the stresses. And I can just see how they relax. And then, honestly, they cry when they leave because they just know it's going to be a while before they get back. And now people come regularly so they can I have an attorney from Dallas that comes once a year, and he now, the minute he gets there, he decompresses. You know, it's kind of funny.
Wow.
They arrive, they throw their suitcases in the cabin, and they take off for Boot Jack Lake, which only the locals know about. They act like they're locals, you know, because we've showed them all the places. So.
And it's very different than going to a resort at a hotel where there's other people. You know, this is just, it sounds really lovely.
Well, there is other people, and, you know, we have campfires every night, and most every night if there's people around. And then, you know, people make lifelong friends at the resort. You know, like a lot of times they'll come back the same time the next year. Or,
right,
they may, you know,
there are people there, but not like
yeah.
what, like a big commercial hotel where you come in. You know,
no.
That's what I mean. It's nothing like that. It sounds like
it's
comfortable.
Yeah.
And you also run seminars.
Yeah, we do. We get retreats.
So,
we just finished one up with there's a group of MIT grad students that came out and did a retreat out here from Boston. And then we just, then we got the, let's see, there were the neurosurgeon alumni from Stanford came up for a retreat. So we get a lot of really interesting people that come. So there's great conversations around the campfire.
Wow. And do you have, like, one seminar going on, or is there sometimes more than one at the same time? Or do you have some extra guests?
Yeah. It depends on how many there is in the seminar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they take the whole place. And, you know, like, we had a group of Jesuit volunteers come in, and they took the whole resort, and they liked it because they could do their own meals in the kitchen, or also if once in a while we did a meal for them. But they had the whole run of the place, and when they got out, it was like camp because everybody took off to their little cabin, you know. And it was great fun because it's its own little village, and then there's a Mongolian yurt there that that we do the seminars in. So,
Good.
Yeah,
but
and
it
we
can
have
also
a,
be nice. If a group doesn't fill up the whole place and you intermix with some other people that are visiting from wherever they come from.
Well,
I think they come from around the world.
Yeah, it was interesting the summer before. We got two groups in. One was at the woods and one was at the ranch. And so we brought them all together for a barbecue, and they're both from Kentucky. Well, it ended up they lived in the same town, two blocks from each other, and they didn't know each other. So, you know, things like that happen all the time, It is very interesting.
And are you looking for certain types of seminars to happen at your place? Like, do you have some criteria?
No. I'm not picky, but I really like, for my selfish self, I like to learn something from people that come in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, we welcome anybody. And one thing that's really good about Donna and I is we're really inclusive, and we make everybody feel real comfortable.
And so how long are the seminars usually?
Oh, they can be from one day to 10 days. It just depends on the group. I know that the MIT graduates, I think they came in for 4 or 5 days. That's usually about the longest they come in. You know, family reunions will come in for 10 days.
Sounds like 10 days. It would be like you've taken over a new lifestyle and you never want to return to the old.
Exactly.
So what kind of visions and dreams do you have for the next few years for either building the ranch or doing the other kind of work you talked about?
Well, we'll see what doors open up, you know. I want to definitely get back to helping our tribe and the young kids. I want to get, you know, we've got 30 horses, and I want to get to helping more Indian youth get back to their roots, you know, because horses are so healing, and they're so amazing that I want to be able to get a little bit closer to see what we can do to help.
Do they have horses on their reservation?
You know, I bring, we're about 70 miles from the reservation now, and it's funny, I always bring different groups up. I brought this one man and woman, and they brought their grandkids, and now they went back, and they've bought horses, and they're doing their little camps, and they got their teepee village, just kind of like what we have, you know, so we were definitely an inspiration to them to get. But, I mean, kids just love those horses. So whatever we can do to encourage them, you know, to get back to the roots. And
well, in some of my studies of relationships and healing and just mental health, one of the things that has been known is that when people come from a reservation, very often there's a problem with alcohol abuse.
Oh, don't get me started on that. Yeah,
but,
I've got my theory on that too.
What is your theory on that? It's interesting.
I don't know. I don't know if I can say it on your show. So I'll probably offend a lot of people.
Oh, okay. But what I wanted to say about that is that if they are given this opportunity to overcome that inner oppression and be connected with animals, horses, that can make a huge difference.
I guess I can say that. My theory is that, Erica, that, you know, when my mom was little, the government tried to assimilate the Indians into society or whatever. You know, they put them on reservations. And then they decided they had to put them into, they put them into boarding schools. And a few of the religions came and started putting them into boarding schools. And they were beaten for being Indian. They had to take, they cut their hair. They had to wear white clothes, and they kept them for a long time. My mom was kept till she was eighth grade, and a lot of them were kept through college. And so then when they go back to their reservations, they were ashamed. You know, they were a lot of times. There's abuse for sure, and now it's come out. There just settlement the other day on all the sexual abuse from those schools. Well, you send those kids back and they're shamed, and of course there's alcoholism. There's no other escape.
Oh, they were shamed.
And then
I haven't heard about the abuse at the schools too. So they had it from every direction.
Yeah,
they were taken out of their culture.
Yeah, and my mom used to tell me about all the nasty stuff that went on, and I would just say, "Oh, mom, you know, can't be, you know."
You thought she was just exaggerating.
Yeah, but now there's just a big settlement on our reservation a few weeks ago, and many people got $250,000 because of the abuse they endured through the schools. So, you know, it was true, you know.
Wow.
So you take that, and of course there's alcoholism. But then it comes my generation, and we say, oh, you know. And then the more of us that got educated, it's like, oh, that's what's wrong.
Well, then you think it's the person's fault that this is happening. So you have a huge task, I think, because you know something and you can help all these people.
I think so. You know, and maybe I'm wrong, but that's from my study and my research, that's what I found. You know, and of course I've lived it too. You know, my mom was in boarding school, and yeah, I've lived in both worlds. My dad was white, and so I was always too dark or too light. So I think that's why I got out and learned as much as I could.
Wow, so your ranch is like a healing place.
Oh, definitely. It really is. We've got I've got one of my Indian cousins as a manager on our woods, and we built a gratitude peak. And a lot of our guests use it this summer. I saw a lot of we'll go up there at 6 a.m, watch the sunrise, and sing a faith song. And all our guests have been so touched by that. We've got a medicine wheel up there and that kind of thing. So it makes it really, you know, you always don't want to get involved in politics or religion, right? But it's kind of a universal place because the medicine wheel is used in so many religions.
Wow, that sounds beautiful.
It really is.
Nancy, thank you so much for offering our listeners some insight into another way of life. And this place, I can't wait to go there. It sounds like a serene and natural place.
And you're welcome anytime, Boris. Yeah.
Just back into nature and that sleigh ride, that sounds so exciting, even jumping in the hay. So,
yeah.
It's exciting. How can people get in touch with you? Do you have a website?
We do. It's Gaynors, GAYNORS Resorts with a S.com.
Okay, GaynorsResorts.com. Thank you so much, Nancy.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Erica.
On our next show, I'll be speaking with Shella Dean, a nationally recognized relationship coach, best-selling author, and creator of her trademarked Redate Your Mate program. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond. or schedule a coaching or counseling session at drericawellness.com.